The governor. A person who governs, the ruler or chief magistrate of a colony, of a province, the representative of the crown, or the head of a society, the chief executive of a state. Ha, that's what it's about today. No, it's actually about the law of running. Stay tuned, a great show coming up.
Welcome to Hypno Running, the show where we do more than just talk about running. We help you find solutions to develop your full potential, making you a better, faster, and smarter runner. And here is your host, Heiko.
Yes, thank you very much for joining me on today's show. Today I want to talk about and summarize, and I'm going to be using a lot of content from the internet here. So I'm going to be quoting, I'm going to be reading a lot from a document. And what is it all about? I'm so excited. It's about a 930-page book, which I really recommend to you. Law of Running, Tim Noakes. Printed in 1986, fantastic bundle of research, deeply scientific methods, which he's explaining here in a way you need to read it quite often. It's one of the books that has got the most earmarks that out of all the books I have on my bookshelf. And it was a book that the running community, the fitness enthusiasts, they were impressed with it. It's a comprehensive guide to running. And it covers training, nutrition, psychological aspects. And basically, it's two books. Actually, it's even more than two books. It's like four. The first four chapters, they're all dedicated on research, on a century of scientific literature. Where do you get that? Don't tell me you get that in a TikTok video. Just work hard. Just like never give up. No, hang on. These pages, they're a very, very dense read because Noakes, he begins the chapter that describes the structure and functions of the muscle. That's a pretty important thing, isn't it? So he explains how the muscles contract and fire and how type 1, slow twitch muscles, are different from type 2, fast twitch muscles. You might have heard of that. And there's a chapter on oxygen transport and running economy, which evaluates what might be called the VO2 max theory of training, which focuses on optimizing the amount of oxygen that our cardiovascular system can circulate and what is the impact on our performance? What does it matter? And Noakes also actually suggests alternatively that training, it improves performance by improving running economy. That's how I always understood it. Even before I become a run coach, I would always focus on, you need to improve your run economy, like promoting physiological adaptation so that your body can use the available oxygen to run efficiently, faster and further. And that's what actually happens if you suddenly get your breathing right and you suddenly notice, it's the first step. If you progress from 3 kilometers to 10, you've got your breathing right. And actually what is happening is that the available oxygen is being used more effectively. There's a third chapter on energy systems, which talks all about the carbohydrates and all of that. And then there's a final last chapter, which basically outlines the way that our body controls temperature during exercises. It explains what happens with dehydration and heat exhaustion. As Noakes takes aim on all these points, it's all based on scientific research and training programs over the last 50 years. And he goes back to Nobel laureate recipients like Hartley Lipton, who were the first to actually measure oxygen consumption during exercise. They were the ones that came up with it. And at low exercise levels, energy comes from aerobic oxygen requiring sources connected to adenosine triphosphate, that as ATP, that is the production in the mitochondria of skeletal muscles. That means if a human being wants to run faster than 30 kilometers per hour, pretty fast, according to Hill and Lupton, there's a secondary energy source which provides anaerobic, meaning the absence of oxygen metabolism. Ah, some of you are going, yes, that's right. I learned that at some stage or another. And then there was later research which built up on this, and it developed a more individual concept of VO2 max. So it includes the idea that individuals could improve that VO2 max and thereby their performance. So others use the basic notion that Hill and Lipton developed the anaerobic threshold idea. And shortly before an athlete reaches maximum work rate, oxygen consumption, you hit a plateau and you didn't increase any further. And this so-called anaerobic threshold, So improving VO2 max and raising the anaerobic threshold in athletes, that was the stated goal of endurance training for the last 50 years. And Noakes proceeds to, he revises those theories. While good runners, really good runners, like pro level, have a high VO2 max, and poor runners usually don't. So the athletes with the highest VO2 max are not necessarily the best performers. Something else is involved in the performance other than the man's heart or the woman's heart capacity to pump the maximum amount of oxygen at maximum effort. That's where Noakes disputes that idea that an anaerobic or lactate threshold, a set point in all runners, where muscles shift from oxygen energy to burning carbohydrate to produce lactate as a form of muscle fuel, even exists. So he disputes that idea. Stay with me, even if it's getting a bit complicated. It'll make sense later on. So Noakes' revisions of VO2 max, the capacity to transport larger amounts of oxygen to the muscles at maximum efforts, it's less important to endurance athletes than the efficiency which the body uses available energy resources, oxygen, at a lower level, like 80% of maximum effort. Aha, that's why when I stop my stopwatch, it's comparing it to 80%. There you go. In terms of the anaerobic threshold, it's a technically misunderstanding to say that muscle switches at a set point from aerobic to anaerobic activity, because the muscles produce lactate from the very beginning of the exercise, and the levels are not clearly evident until exercise intensity increases. So even if a lactate threshold does not exist, Noakes states that the term lactate turn point, a point at which the blood level of lactate shows a significant and visible increase. So at 85 to 95% of VO2 max effort, virtually all of the energy in the skeletal muscles comes from carbohydrate oxidization and the production of lactate. Now, Noakes also, he gives some powerful pieces of practical information for runners. So in terms of raising the lactate turn point as a goal of training, that this would suggest that we improve too quickly. He did a study. I'm not sure if he did a study or if he refers to the study, if I'm quite honest now, but there's a study where athletes were training for a marathon by running 73 kilometers per week. That's a lot. Just under 45 miles over a 36-week period. And improved their lactate turn points from 63% of VO2 max to 71% of VO2 max. That's 8%. That's impressive. But you know what? All of that change took place in, drumroll, the first 12 weeks of training. And they did not improve after that. So it was like 8% and that was it. And the study suggests that more than half of that improvement actually takes place in the first 10 days of training. So if training to improve the lactate turn point is a goal, training specifically for that goal, it seems, should last for approximately the first 12 weeks of a training program. And with a big emphasis on the first 10.5 days of training. But how is it then that runners improve after 12 weeks? What actually happens then if we're studying it like scientists? And this is where Noakes goes into a deep dive, you know, presenting scientific information on other topics in these chapters. Some of it is very practical. For example, muscle function chapter, he notes that the scientific evidence is not clear about the value of weight training for endurance athletes. Running economy is not just training to use oxygen, but it also includes the benefits of lighter shoes. He talks about properly fitting clothes, and he even talks about short hair. I guess that's a South African thing. And he notes that the science of temperature regulation predicts that the winners of Olympic marathons run in severe summer heat will be smaller runners. That was one of the theories that he came out with. Basically, Noakes presents his well-reasoned and a huge research conducted on this information explaining the cardiovascular anaerobic model of exercise physiology. And that's the paradigm for over 50 years. So he took on a big subject. That's why it's a 930-page book. And he writes, I'm quoting here, "The major weakness of the cardiovascular anaerobic model is that it predicts something that does not occur." Listen to this. "The heart does not fatigue as a result of anaerobesis during maximum exercise, nor do healthy subjects terminate exercise because they develop chest pain angina pectoris, resulting from an inadequate oxygen supply to the heart. Thus, proponents of this model face the challenge of explaining how blood supply to the exercising skeletal muscle can be inadequate while that to the heart is adequate. End of quote. Wow. So to solve the mystery, Noakes goes all the way back to Hill and Lipton, and he looks at the original finding, which he, there are some flaws in it, but there's still a lot of value to it. And he speculated about something that was forgotten for almost 80 years. And Hill and Lipton, they understood that it would be useless and dangerous for the heart to continue beating harder and harder to supply itself oxygen. And they suggested that there was a mechanism in the body, either in the heart muscle or in the nervous system, that caused a slowing of the circulation as soon as serious degree of unsaturation occurred, and vice versa. And Noakes writes, this mechanism, I'm quoting here, they said acted as governor. Did you pay attention at the intro? Yes, the governor theory. Yeah, it's making sense. I told you, just stick with me. So the big words that Noakes uses to name this ideas are the integrated neuromuscular recruitment model of exercise. I got it right. Or in short, as he calls it, the central governor model. And I'm sure you've heard of that. So the heart is the organ at greatest risk during exercise in healthy athletes, but it always survives. So Noakes writes, and I'm quoting again, the mechanism must exist to restrain the over-vigorous use of the exercising skeletal muscles, which would imperil the heart. Something measures the oxygenation of the heart and perhaps the brain as well, and when dangerous condition approaches, sends out signals to stop recruiting the work of the muscles, creating the overload. As a result, the body experiences fatigue. Note, like pain, fatigue is always sensed exclusively by the brain. Unquote. Wow. So then the work output of the muscles and the heart falls, so the heart needs less oxygen. Thereby, it protects the heart from the damage of oxygen starvation. Really smart. So Noakes approaches the same territory about a central governor at several points in these early chapters, and he gets there in these chapters with a scientific and reasoned approach. So the central government doesn't just monitor oxygenation of the blood, but also body temperature, blood glucose levels, and glycogen levels in the liver, and many other variables that put us in potential danger when we exercise at a stressful level. And Noakes, he did some studies with a colleague, Sinclair Gibson, and they suggested a different definition of fatigue. I like this. I'm quoting again. Fatigue is actually a central brain perception. In fact, a sensation or emotion and not a direct physical event. And in terms of runners and fatigue, Noakes adds, fatigue is merely the physical manifestation of a change in pacing strategy, unquote. Whew. So the implication of what Noakes actually says is, with or without research to back it up, is that what you already know, we really aren't performing as athletes so that we have a higher VO2 max or a higher lactate threshold. We're really training our central governors, the rulers, some mechanism of brain function so that the brain allows the body to work a little bit harder before the brain decides to shut us down or to slow us down. Alternatively, in very practical terms, proper pacing keeps that central governor happy, satisfied, so that the central governor doesn't sense any danger and you as runner don't feel fatigue. Now, as runners or as a coach, you know, I often tell athletes, it's all in your head, or, you know, success is 90% mental. You believe you can do it. And of course, that is a big, important part. It's backed up by what Noakes actually states. It is all in your head. It will be regulated. And there's some powerful quotes, you know, by the United States Olympic bronze medalist, 10,000 meters from way back, Jennings, and a very nice quote. Mental will is a muscle that needs exercise just like the muscles of the body. Or Kenny Moore in a quote, it's the illusion that we can go no faster that holds us back. And it's more complicated than that, but there is more that we can do than just think we are close to the governor setting in. Now, if you're reading the book Tim Noakes' law of running and the psychological science of running, you're going to also find practical training advice. And a lot of it is for those of you who have just started out running, and there's a 14-step plan, which I find absolutely fantastic. I mean, he reflects a lot and represents he presents some of the greatest runners, American Indian Deerfoot, who traveled to Great Britain during the 1860s to become an international running sensation. If you're a runner, you're taking part in a sport that has been famous in 1860 and even further. You know, and they asked Deerfoot, how did he train? And he says on page 363, I've never trained. This is not the advice that Noakes gives, but I think it's a hint for his overall approach. Otherwise, why would he have included it in the book? And it's because one of his laws is, Noakes's laws is, achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. Yoo-hoo! Don't you like hearing that? Achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. So Noakes presents stories of the early heroes of distance running, the Flying Finn, Paavo Nurmi, and he gives their training secrets, or Herb Elliott, the Australian world record holder, and the American Frank Shorter, you know, had an Olympic marathon victory in 1972. And just, I was 1 year old then, you know, and it set off a running boom in the United States. And he was really an unremarkable runner until after he had finished college, and his VO2 max was a quite unremarkable 71.3. And Noakes presents information about the development of the African runners in 1960s, you know, Kenyan gold medalist Kip Keino. And he also focused on the emergence of the African runners over the last 50 years, and also Norwegian runners, Grete Waitz, you know, one of the greatest women runners of her generations. And Noakes' mantra always is avoid overtraining. And there's even a chapter on that for those of you that like to overtrain, which is called Avoid Overtraining. And rather focus on training the mind. That's another chapter which he begins with a discussion of Roger Bannister's psychological research, in which Bannister and his friends, they would run to the breaking point on a treadmill. You know who Roger Bannister is? Okay, good, fine. Whether oxygen or a mixture of air and oxygen would produce a better run performance. And it's interesting to speculate that Bannister's personal research into exercise physiology would give him an advantage in his quest to run the 4-minute mile. And Noakes actually says it's an incorrect assumption. And I'm quoting him here. I think success came first to him because he, Bannister, better than anyone perceived that the battle for the 4-minute mile was fought in the mind and not in the body. Wow, I told you, this show is going to help you become a better, a stronger, and a much smarter runner. You know, this is Bannister. This goes way back. And Bannister, of course, he credits his coach, Franz Stampfel. And in his book, the Law of Running, one of the chapters I enjoyed the most is where he describes exactly how Bannister used visualization for his running. And we had a podcast a couple of weeks back where we spoke about that, and I'll dive into that a little bit deeper once again. It is absolutely powerful stuff that's written in there. And then we get along into 15 laws of training that Noakes basically states. There are laws of training, and that's a great list. So law 1, train frequently all year round. Law 2, start gradually and train gently. Law 3, these all make sense. Train first for distance, only later for speed. Law number 4, don't set your daily training schedule in stone. That's the killer right there. Law number 5, alternate hard and easy training. Yes, of course. Law 6, achieve as much as possible on a minimum of training. I personally like that one. Law 7, don't race when in training or run at race pace for distances above 16 kilometers. I don't think I could at the moment. Law 8, specialize. Means find area you're going to focus on. Law 9, incorporate base training and sharpening. Law 10, prevent overtraining. Law 11, train with a coach. Law 12, the best one here, train the mind. Law 13, rest before a big race. Law 14, keep a detailed logbook. Law 15, understand the holism of training. In the book Law of Running, the Law 9 discussion, he picks up on that. He's basically focusing on programs, on training intensities, mandating specific pacing for specific training activities at different periods of training. So coaches and athletes determine these intensities based upon physiological parameters, percentages of VO2 max, or maximum heart rate. So both programs target optimal performance in race from months beforehand, and then it builds carefully towards that peak performance race. So both programs are moderate in terms of their mileage expectations in the range of 100 kilometers per week. So we're talking about elite athletes here, or 60 to 70 miles maximum. So it's like the Daniels program with the 24-week build-up, and there are four phases in that. So for 3 weeks in phase one, that's a Daniel program, the athlete does steady, easy running, and then for three more weeks, more of the same with the addition of some sprints, some stride sprints. And then the second part of phase one also introduces an element of the future weeks, a longer run of up to 25%, only 25% of the weekly mileage. We get to phase two, week 7 to 12. Some quality running is required right there. So one workout each week on day four, it's either repeats 400 meters at race pace or repeat miles at a tempo pace with a short recovery. If you currently you're not in shape, don't listen to this and go, oh, I can't do that anyway. You will be in shape. And if you adhere to a plan, training plan, you will reach phase two, means you have completed phase one, which will give you that base to then perform in phase two. That'll help you keep that tempo pace for the mile repeats. Or even if you feel you can't go faster, the short rest that helps in between. So there's a second workout on day seven where, and I'm quoting here, intervals of on and off, again running 1 minute, 2 minute, or 3 minute runs at 5,000 meter pace, and then easy running for recovery. So that's that interval pace. Or you could maintain for 15 or 20 minutes of competitive running. And these weeks, they also include a day or two for some strides or 200 and 400 meter sprints, which I absolutely don't enjoy, but you need to do them. And the rest of the week is filled with a long run on day one. Yes, most of us love to do the long run, don't we? Phase three, that's weeks 13 to 18. That's the hardest training of the program. So day one is a long run. Day two is the easy run. But the midweek program includes an interval day, repeats of a kilometer or a mile at 5K pace on day three. So day four is an extended tempo run of 20 minutes, 200 meter race sprints included. After easy runs on day five and six, day seven is race or another interval day. And the races are important because it helps you establish a race pace, which in turn establishes the pace of anaerobic threshold, approximately 88% of VO2 max, or about 90% of maximum heart rate. So phase three then includes three hard days out of the seven. Phase four training, that's weeks 19 to 24, is the final quality phase. That's where there's intense training combined with rest and recovery, of course, just before the big race. So this reduces the day one long run to 20% of your weekly mileage. It moves the 20-minute tempo run to day three. Day four becomes a day for sharpening workout and some tempo runs, repeat miles, and it introduces some fatigue, a couple of 1 kilometer intervals at 5K pace to really train at that anaerobic threshold. And then four faster 200 meter repeats at race pace complete the workout to approach that top speed. Easy running fills days five and six, who doesn't like hearing that, with a race or interval workout on day seven. And the final race week, it drops the day four workout. And that's the Daniels program. And it makes good one to use in evaluating what you've been actually doing in you know, reflecting with Noakes' laws of trainings. And his phase schedule fits the rhythm of that schedule. Okay, you heard my enthusiasm, Tim Oakes' Law of Running. It really is a book that explains everything about running in really simple way. I tried my best to give you a summary of a 930-page book. I hope it came across. That's what I want. I want you to be inspired by this book. I want you to be walking around with it and then paging it and reading up on it. Much better than spending time on social media. You know, Tim Noakes, the author, he's a very smart and experienced guy. He knows a lot about the science behind running. And in this book, he really covers all the important stuff you need to know if you want to become a better runner. He talks about how your body works, how your body works when you run. There's advice on how to train effectively. And Noakes also explores different training plans and helps you understand which one is best for you. And it's a self-accomplished mission. And there's a cool thing about the book that it's not just about the physical side of running. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spoken about it. You know that this show is about your attitude, about your mental state. And Noakes, he dives into the mental aspect too. He talks about the mindset you should have and about how to stay motivated. And of course, you know, that's super helpful. You know, running isn't just about your legs. It's as we always discuss, season number 5, what goes on in your head. Noakes also breaks down some myths and misconceptions which you as a runner on your run journey are gonna encounter. And it's easy to understand. It's maybe the summary didn't come across like that. But he talks about hydration, nutrition, recovery, which is all crucial for your run success. And he shares stories from his own experience and those of other runners. That makes the book very relatable for me. It's like getting advice from a good coach, from a friend. So even if you're not, you know, planning to become that pro runner, it has so much for you, whether you're a beginner or experienced. And Noakes provides that practical advice that you can really apply in your training. And his writing style is very easy to follow. So in summary, Tim Noakes, Law of Running, fantastic guide for anybody interested in running. Even though it's from 1986, it's a treasure trove of knowledge. And it's written in such a way that it's accessible. So whether you're lacing your running shoes or just thinking about it, please give this book a read so that you can unlock the secrets and successful and enjoyable running combined with Advanced Endurance Coaching Podcast, where we help you build that motivation so that you're not just reading the book and getting frustrated because of the things you're not doing. You'll actually be able to use the tools in this podcast to keep you going. Yo, there was a lot of information today. I want to finish off with a fantastic verse from the Bible, James 1 verse 12. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial because, having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. A great verse to finish off the show. I say thanks for your attention. Thank you for your time. If you feel the show, somebody needs to listen to it, somebody needs to get some more detailed advice, please do share this link. My name is Heiko. God bless you. And remember, take it easy.